In the city of brotherly love, Kamala Harris faced Donald Trump, their first meeting ever and possibly the only debate in this US presidential election between the two candidates. But beyond the opening handshake, the insults, the jibes, the baiting were threaded through the 100-minute encounter. The pair are neck and neck in the polls. So will this debate move the dial? Will it persuade those independents, the undecideds, to swing towards Trump or towards Harris? Outside of the debate hall and the spin room, it was Taylor Swift signing herself childless cat lady, who stole the headlines, endorsing Kamala Harris to her 283 million Swiftie followers on Instagram. Our Washington correspondent Sean Whelan is joining us now from Philadelphia. Later we'll have further analysis from Professor Bob Schmuel, but first some highlights from that debate.
The candidates separated by the smallest of margins, essentially tied in the polls nationally and in the key battlegrounds, including right here in Pennsylvania, all still very much in play. The ABC News presidential debate starts right now.
Kamala Harris, let's have a good debate.
Nice to see you. Have fun.
Thank you.
Welcome to you both. It's wonderful to have you. It's an honor to have you both here tonight.
I believe in the ambition, the aspirations, the dreams of the American people. And that is why I imagine and have actually a plan to build what I call an opportunity economy.
I created one of the greatest economies in the history of our country. I'll do it again and even better.
You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom.
People don't leave my rallies. We have the biggest rallies, the most incredible rallies in the history of politics. That's because people want to take their country back. What they have done to our country by allowing these millions and millions of people to come into our country, a lot of towns don't want to talk about it because they're so embarrassed by it. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there had been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say,
any restrictions on a woman's right to an abortion?
I have been a leader on fertilization, IVF. And the other thing, you should ask, will she allow abortion in the 8th month, 9th month, 7th month?
Come on.
Okay, would you do that? Why don't you ask her that question?
Why don't you answer the question? Would you
because
veto?
Under Roe v. Wade,
answer the question,
you could do abortions in the 7th month, the 8th month, the 9th month,
not true.
And probably after birth.
Sean Whelan in Philadelphia, very good morning to you. Now, that was just a small flavour of what was a long debate. But let's just get the overview, first of all. And over the course of that debate, how did each of the candidates perform?
Well, it could have been curtains for Kamala over the course of this debate if she had stumbled, if she had fallen into the kind of traps that had been well flagged out there. If she didn't appear presidential, if she blew up, if she wasn't able to answer questions sufficiently well, if she didn't have enough detail, if she wasn't able to introduce herself to the American people, and most of all, if she wasn't able to land any blows on Donald Trump and instead allowed him to dominate her and basically lay into her on stage in the way that he did against Hillary Clinton all those years ago. She didn't do any of those things. She survived. She got off to a rocky start, but then she started to grow into the debate itself and started to lay traps of her own. And she succeeded in snaring Trump several times, but most notably on that dog and cat outburst that you played there, where she had been asked a tough question on immigration, an issue on which she is batting on a very sticky wicket. She's quite weak on this issue of immigration. Trump is seen as much stronger by the electorate here in America. She started off blaming Trump by accusing him of blocking a bill in Congress that would have given them much of what the Republicans have been asking for, albeit that had arrived very late in the day, but suddenly diverted into the issue of the crowds that turn up at Trump rallies, the size of the crowds, and questioning their interest in what he was saying and accusing him of peddling the same old tired things over and over again and saying that people were leaving early. And that just triggered the man. He started shouting and ranting about his rallies being the most successful political rallies in history, the biggest in the history of the world. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And then started attacking her over the immigrants coming in and allegedly eating cats and dogs. And as you heard, there was that intervention by the moderators. There weren't that many interventions by them, but they were starting to pull him up on that. And that was one of those moments when Republican spin doctors were kind of slapping their forehead and saying, this is exactly what we didn't want him to do. So he basically blew it on the night. He's come out of this quite badly. Most of the media and even some commentators on the Trump-friendly network Fox News have been saying that he did a bad job on it tonight and that she has come out of it rather better than she went into it and at least looks presidential and stays in the race and stays as a contender.
Yeah, because Donald Trump is not known as a details guy. But his people, as you say, they wanted him to talk policy. They wanted him to talk about the economy. They wanted him to talk about immigration. Did he talk policy?
Not really. I mean, a lot of it was saying just bold assertions of the type you've heard before. I ran the best economy ever. I kept all the immigrants out. Nobody started any wars on my watch. But really, he had a number of open goals there. Harris is not good on economics generally, and she is coming from a very tricky position with the high level of inflation that has occurred in this country over the past couple of years, while herself and Joe Biden have been in the White House running things. The affordability crisis has really hit hard into an awful lot of ordinary American homes, and she doesn't have much to say about that. In fact, it was the first question that was put to her. Are Americans better off now than they were 4 years ago? A question which Trump has posed at his own rallies and in his own interviews and press conferences. It's the almost unanswerable question because for most Americans, no, they don't feel better off now. She couldn't answer that directly. Instead, she tried this diversionary tactic that Trump himself has rather mastered and pioneered over the last few years, started talking about what she might do in the future. Wasn't really convincing stuff at all. But instead of coming back and hammering her on the record of the past 3.5 years, Trump kind of let it slip. He missed an open goal there. And it was the same on the immigration issue. Again, Harris is extremely vulnerable on this. It is regarded as a crisis by most American voters, including most Democrats. They're very concerned about the open border in the South. He didn't really hammer home the advantages that he had in those areas, let her slip away, and she was able to mount her attacks and take the initiative. He didn't take the fight to her.
And on abortion, he was fact-checked again by the moderator.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of times that the moderators fact-checked him. This one saying that there is no state in America that allows post-birth abortions, that is to say, killing newborn babies. He had been saying that that is a Democrat policy. They had to come back at him on that one. And Kamala Harris said, no, of course, that's not allowed and we don't support that. But again, he was uncomfortable on that issue. And that was the turning point where she was able to start gaining comfort in the debate. It came quite early in the debate itself. That was the point at which she stabilized her diction, loosened up. She didn't sound nervous, like she didn't sound like she had a dry throat as she did when she was talking about the economy, and was able to start sounding empathetic and passionate about the issue and putting pressure on Donald Trump himself. And that's why he was resorting to more and more extreme language about killing babies after they've been born. And it wasn't going down well with the audience. And again, it was the type of thing that his own advisors had been saying, steer away from it. There's a safe path here. You can talk about this issue with authority without getting stuck into the weeds. But she had provoked him and he just couldn't help himself. And that was the story of the night. He just couldn't help himself.
Sean, we'll move on to foreign policy because the candidates, and we'll hear a clip here, they also discussed the wars in Ukraine and Gaza.
If I were president, it would have never started. If I were president, Russia would have never, ever. I know Putin very well. He would have never, and there was no threat of it either, by the way, for 4 years, have gone into Ukraine and killed millions of people when you add it up. Far worse than people understand what's going on over there. But when she mentions about Israel, all of a sudden, she hates Israel. If she's president, I believe that Israel will not exist within 2 years from now. And I've been pretty good at predictions, and I hope I'm wrong about that one.
And so, absolutely, I said then, I say now, Israel has a right to defend itself. We would. And how it does so matters. It must end immediately, and the way it will end is we need a ceasefire deal and we need the hostages out. And so we will continue to work around the clock on that. Work around the clock, also understanding that we must chart a course for a two-state solution.
Did she goad him here as well, Sean, with her accusing him of love letters to Kim Jong-un and telling him Putin would eat him for lunch?
Yeah, very much, because he's always portrayed himself as being the great negotiator, the great deal maker. And that remark about Putin in particular intended to wound, but also where she was talking about Ukraine specifically, saying that Trump's plan to end the war is simply to give in and let Putin do whatever he wants. If it was up to him, Putin would have been sitting in Kyiv now, eyeing the rest of Europe, starting with Poland, and saying to him, explain this to 800,000 Polish Americans about why their country should be the next one on the block for Putin in order for Trump to gain curry favour with him. So she was definitely goading him there, and he wasn't able to really come back on it.
But at the end of it all, does it shift the dial for either candidate?
It shifts the dial for Harris in the sense that it keeps her alive in the race, and people can now start thinking about her as a plausible contender to be a president. It's Trump has been extremely successful in all of his other debating appearances, and even in the primaries where he didn't take part in any of the debates, but still the people who were running against him all self-destructed or took each other out during the course of those debates. This is the first time really he's suffered a serious reverse in a debate, and it looked like he didn't really know how to handle this new, unexpected to him candidate. He spent the past couple of years planning to fight against Joe Biden, and now he suddenly has to fight against Kamala Harris. And he doesn't look like he has the weapons or know how to use them against her. So that stands to her advantage. Will it move the dial of the people who want to vote for her? Mm-hmm. No, it probably won't. The Taylor Swift thing surprised absolutely nobody when it happened. It's the undecided voters in the middle. And we're only going to find out that in the next couple of weeks. But it certainly puts her firmly in contention in this race. It keeps her going for the next 2 months. There probably won't be another debate like this. So she now has the opportunity to further explain herself. She has survived the first test, the acid test, the Trump test.
Well, thank you, Sean Whelan, for a first analysis of that debate from Philadelphia. We'll have more from Professor Bob Schmuel later on in the programme.